There are Christians who sincerely believe that the person who is here the most thoroughly poor in spirit will be the richest and greatest there. You will find that there is a deep meaning in this sentence. Does it not mean that the left race will be equal to the race of the right side? The greatest here will be the least there. They that superficially exalt themselves are naturally abased, because the next step they take from a false exaltation is certain to plant them upon a lower position. The Negro, starting from this left side of nature, and the Caucasian from the right, will in the Summerland represent two great opposite races. Men do not take their complexions with them. They take only the facts, which are indestructible, the consequences, the ultimates, the realities, not the primates, the fictions and the falsehoods. Ultimates are fully developed after death, and they are so developed that what here corresponds to Indians, Mongolians, and Malays, are the visible and distinguishable by many radical characteristics. In the Father's house there are many mansions, because there are essentially different modifications of the human family. Each wants a comfortable, happy place in the second sphere. In the Summerland there are localities for all divisions and shades of the human race. There are always wings to great palaces. Middle places too, but grand side positions invariably. The Caucasian world moves all through one wing, and the African world is free to move all through the opposite wing of the infinite palace. Nature is just as powerful and beautiful and eternal as God. God and nature work together. So science and art work together. The male and the female go on through all eternity. Intermediates also long continue. The principles that are at work artistically making the tiny shells upon the seashore, are eternal principles. They are working as faithfully in the higher spheres as within and upon the earth. They round out globes and make roads throughout the universe. On some future occasion it may be shown what has ultimated and blossomed out in the second sphere from the various kingdoms organized on the face of the earth. How natural and beautiful is what men call spirit. How rational and philosophical is all that men term supernatural. How entirely at home, and not as strangers, will we all be where each has ascended to the Summerland. Next headline, A Voice from the Spirit Land. On the 21st day of August, 1859, while making clairvoyant examinations and writing upon the second part of The Thinker, in the fraternal mansion of C.O. Poole, Esquire, at Buffalo, New York, I realized a gush of thoughts, surcharged with inexpressible longings, regarding the pure nature and visitation of James Victor Wilson. The wave soon subsided, however, and I was, as before, only occupied with the subject of my writing. The next day the same beautiful thoughts of him, and the same fraternal yearnings for his personal presence, pervaded my whole mind. But these meditations and longings, as before, passed gently and utterly away. This experience was repeated from day to day until the 25th, the early morn of which dawned with the person of my brother hovering in its wings. He came with his accustomed gentleness, stood close by the open window at which I was writing, and we conversed as naturally as any two spirits ever did. Of this I need not speak, having, as I think, amply explained the method thereof in several preceding works. But regarding the personal appearance of this unearthed brother, who has resided some 10 years in the spirit land, I may remark briefly. His form is more round than when last I beheld him, and his motions and gestures are characterized with more uprightness and dignity. His bodily presence ennobled me at once, and I felt like one standing in the midst of royalty. His habiliments were artificial, evidently the work of more delicate bands than those of the finest terrestrial maiden, and bewore them as though he lived in a land of summer warmth and glory. The outlines of his fine form were visible through his garments. Of the following imperfect report of his conversation a few explanatory words are necessary. After luxuriating some 20 minutes or more in social commerce, during which he introduced the object of his visit, I then took time to write down all my memory of his communication. While engaged thus, my friend would depart from the window? Whither I knew not. But he invariably returned in time to correct any mistake in conception or spelling, and to proceed with the narration. In every instance where strange words were used to designate places, persons, or things, my habit was, as it always is, to request the repetition of them, in order to make certain of the pronunciation and orthography. Many words of this clam occur in the following report. And here let the reader bear in mind, that these new words are written just as Brother Wilson pronounced them repeatedly in my hearing. Each syllable is to be spoken as written, which will then yield the correct pronunciation, and the sound of each word, as heard from the tongue of the gentle spirit, conveys the sweetest music and the highest impression. Regarding the contents of this communication, I have nothing to say by way of explanation, but cheerfully commit them to the reader's reason as a throughout my last discourse the flowed a turbulent river. Footnote. See his communication in Philosophy of Spiritual Intruse. My joy was unutterable, my delight ineffable, my perception of truth ecstatic. Much have I wondered what my friends would think of that imperfect report. Long have I wished to make a closer and a nicer revelation of the angel's home. The spirit land is indeed a country of undying charms and positive attractions. Among the millions of conceptions which within 10 years I have unlearned, there remains one which is more sublime and growingly permanent than any truth I at first discerned, and that I gave you. The universe is a musical instrument, on which the divinity is perpetually expressing the infinitely diversified harmonies of his nature, which is immeasurably deep and altogether unchangeable. Are you less joyous? I inquired. Have you less delight and less truth than when you last visited me? All things are new, he replied. I am less ecstatic now, because I am more happy. My joy is calmer because profounder. In the early months of my existence here, I was as a child overexcited with the worlds of immeasurable magnitude which rolled musically in every quarter of the firmament. I was wild with the ocean of attractions that throbbed round about my immortal self. No youth ever felt one half of my enthusiasm. Every excursion troop sent me an invitation. I visited world upon world, walked upon planets 20 times larger and greatly more populous than Earth. Meditated as I thought, studied assiduously as I believed, tested facts by analysis as I fancied, and made nice philosophic measurements of much consecrated truth, yet I have inhaled, as I now know, but the fragrance of a few of those flowers which grow on the margin of the infinite ocean. If the task be not unpleasant, my angel brother, said I, if this self-criticism be not ungracious and unworthy of your wisdom, will you contribute to earthly minds the occupations and studies of your past few years? A heavenly light beamed from his white brow, and a rich flood of love poured out of his large, earnest blue eyes, when he opened his rosy lips to reply, as the sun unrolls the flower, so have I had my being unrolled by the spontaneous working of eternal principles. But while traveling and flitting, so to speak, from star to star, dividing my thoughts by a countless variety of new sights, I made no happy progress in heavenly knowledge. Socially, intuitionally, and perceptively, I had obtained and absorbed much, but when at length I wanted more than this, my reflective reason informed me that I was ignorant. Hundreds, yea thousands, have lived here thousands of years without visiting the surrounding worlds of space. Such are consecrated to the Father's service in healthful ways that are pleasant. Among these are Prodicus the eloquent Greek, Euripides the tragic poet, Socrates the ethical teacher, Hermogenes, Plato, Xenophon, Mosius, Anaxagoras, Crito, and unnumbered other old men on earth of vast superiority of mind, who, though brilliant with youthfulness now, and illustrious with a torrent of holy acts throbbing through their harmonious hearts, are fixed in their self-made orbits here, like the immutable stars of destiny in your stellar scenery. Do not these persons travel in the spirit land? I asked, with unrestrained surprise. My angel brother smiled with an awakened fervor spreading over his face, and replied, They bring the whole universe down to their feet, and comprehend in truth every world and all the planets I have visited with infinitely more potent thought and spiritual accuracy than I can understand even now. You make a curious statement, said I. Perhaps you can explain it so that I may get the image of your thought. Happy word! He exclaimed. Images and likenesses are but forms of ideas within the great minds of this existence. The realm of objects and forms is the educt of the world of ideas. The sensational sphere they regard as the sphere of effects, the causes being inherent to mind, or vasyael, which is what you term spirit. Only he travels who knows not the contents of his own spirit. That every sun and fixed star, every world or heaven of worlds, that latitudes and distances, objects, forms, time, are contained in man, passeth as yet my highest understanding. Yet there is a symmetrical dawning of this truth over the horizon of my faithful reason. I never doubt it. Whenever inspired by the discourse of those chief stars of immeasurable self-possession, whose intellectual powers sweep the unmapped empires of immensity. Friend Victor, I interposed, can you explain how it was that your great thirst for journeying was satisfied? That thirst is not quenched, he replied, another attraction prevails with me now, and has governed my thoughts for several years, I mean the study of antiquity. Of antiquity. I exclaimed. It seems to me that you are the last mind to be so employed. Let me relate an incident, he replied. I was admiring the geometrical figures made upon the smooth soil by the shadows of a certain flower, when a member of the Plana de Alfos, a holy brotherhood, approached me, and asked, which influence exalts you most, the sounds of the Poralium? A musical spring, or the incense of the Vorelia, a beautiful and fragrant rose, that blooms on the slopes of the Pantrolo? This name is given to a group of graceful hills in the distance. No answer came to his simple question. He had many times witnessed the outbreaks of my boyish enthusiasm. A serene beauty and a brotherly compassion characterized his face and speech, for he had let me into the depth of my own ignorance regarding the most familiar objects in the spirit land. My mind mounted to a higher level of emotion and labor, and tenderly did I pray in silence to know which of the two influences was most exalting to my feelings. Although I had much intuitive knowledge of the spiritual laws, had contemplated from the purple mountains of the omniscient spirit, had walked reverently beneath the stooping sky of many worlds in space, had studied as I thought the sculpture of omnipotence in all the towers of the stellar universe, yet there I stood confounded by the noble Greek's simple question, yea, rebuked 1,000 times every moment by the unfolded Vorelio at my feet, and equally by the divine melody of the ever-flowing Poralium. Can you not reply? Asked the Greek, who was even more gentle and compassionate than before. I replied in candor that I could not, and added, allow me the informing advantages of your brotherhood, attach me to your tender-spirited wisdom for a season, and I will promise to find the knowledge of God as he originally hid it in the least of things. The good man extended his hand as a token of agreement. The tidal forces of his love beat through my heart. Like the 10th billow of a majestic flowing sea was the uplifting influence of his wisdom beneath me. In silence I accompanied him to the brotherhood of the Plana de Alfos. Here I asked my friend Wilson if he would give me a description of that celestial association. He replied, you remember the arcanum which I before disclosed, that those spirits which emanate from the earth, or from any other planet in the universe, are introduced into that society for which they entertain the most congenial sympathies and affections? This, like every other society or brotherhood, is thus organized. It is situated on one of an unnumbered host of islands, which mark and diversify the geography of the spirit land. The name of this beautiful isle is Acroponemade, meaning all-sided perfection. It is of immense proportions, but slopes on every side, wave-like, to the water's edge, where the endless rows of flowering ganjuli, or fragrant trees, add their symmetrical glory to the scene. These ganjuli grow in the glorious gardens. They cover with their shade musical Porolium here and there, and blend their perfume with the odor of the immortal Vorelia blooming in the courts, on with the incense which stealthily floats down from the dreamy Pantrilo, where millions of those fairy flowers perpetually breathe their holy prayers. The Isle of Acropanamade is shaped something like an earthly bear. It is more beautiful and heavenly than any terrestrial landscape can ever be. A brilliant river of vivid charms, called Apilabida, flows like God's grace and love around the head of the isle. The smaller river, Atadile, glides down from the opposite direction, against the narrow point of the isle, whither it separates into two equal streams, and flows thence musically into the embrace of the ever-glorious Apilabida. Birds of the most celestial song, and with plumage of the simplest beauty conceivable, fill the fragrant air with a mournful melody. The saddest singing bird is called Quar, a native of the planet Mars, but brought here by the inhabitants of this isle, who frequently visit the living population there, even as spirits now begin to hold commerce with the Earth's inhabitants. Ineffably sweeter to me is the varied and rich notes, yet ever sad songs, of the Barscatella, a forest bird of the ivy-mantled trees of gold and satin. These feathery songsters live and multiply here as they did upon their native orbs. The Brotherhood of Plana do Alfos are serenely active in the greatest wonders of benevolence and art. There is upon this beautiful isle the grandest temple of treasured antiquities. The brothers call it the Agamade, meaning the cabinet of antiquity. Nothing upon earth can similitude this wondrous combination of ancient architecture. There is, apparently, something of every absolute form of edifice in its mighty proportions. In extent, finish, and richness, it is overwhelming. It seems that 10 years of ceaseless walking would not pass me through all its parts. My noble guide and beloved teacher, whom the fraternity name Abusia, in answer to my first question concerning the dimensions of the Agamade, said, "Compose a circle of 21 sevens. This will reveal the number of wings to the temple, also, the number of mansions contained in each wing. Multiply each 7 by the whole number, and the total of the added amounts reveals the number of both the interlinking avenues, and the surmounting domes. Place this number in the center of the circle of 7s, multiply the central figures by each 7 composing the band, and the total amount shows the number of square furlongs of spirit land covered by the Agamade. Multiply the last amount by the central figures, and the product will reveal the number of square English miles of the Isle of Acropanamade. Divide this number by 7, and the amount obtained is the number of brothers who compose the fraternity of Plana do Alfos. Seeing many beautiful women, younger and older, walking in the temple and gardens, I asked my Abusia for information regarding their connection with the Brotherhood. He gently instructed me at some length concerning the balance and equal happiness of the sexes in the benevolent arts and labors of the temple. Many of the women, and as many men, were there under the divine Vasiel, or influence, of the fraternity. Such are called Opiatalia, meaning the patients and students within the temple. My Abusia's lifted intellect seemed to shed sunlight, mingled with mystery, upon everything he alluded to or touched. Field, form, flower, bird, spring, tree, temple, even my fellow beings, were both brilliant with uses and blurred with a sad light shadow of undefinable mystery. He comprehended my condition, as I stood without the wing of the temple, and said cheeringly, "Advance, my Barscatella, bird, for thou art our beloved Opiatalos, student, and the time future is thine to become whatso thou wilt, for thou art even now fit to stir within others the power of thought, and to meditate with the happy Peralorala. The distant Pantrilo will invite and teach thee to comprehend thy God, hid within the fragrant Vorelia and the musical Porolium." "Who are these patients?" I asked. And my Abusia answered, "Seek to know them, and thou shalt understand, feel to do them divine service, and they will tell thee all their secrets. The day is long, and the field is vast down to the waves of the Apilabida. Within the temple is the fountain of Andamont, Beneath the isle is the source of the sweet-flowing Atadile. Within thee is the all-wise, ever-loving Arabula, meaning a divine guest. Therefore, my Bascatella, thou art with us at home, and thy feet will press the path that is pleasant. See to it, I tell thee, that thou becomest worthy to know all things heavenly and eternal. So saying, he turned from me, and disappeared beneath the flowering Ganjuli, the beauty and fragrance of whose foliage surpass all tints and odors upon earth. My Apuzio is a teacher of exceeding grace and power. There is an immaculate clearness in his beautiful eye, his loveful voice is both deep and round with power, impressive eloquence and modesty characterize his face and speech. His form is rounded and is as perfect as imagination can picture harmony of proportion, and when he walks, the celestial colors sprinkle his wavy hair with golden light, while his soft beard glitters with the highest ray of beauty. Demetrius, Tasso, Camoens, Theodorus, could not together form a person more physically beautiful. Oh my brother, the Greek is great and beautiful. His disposition is gentle as a mother's love, yet there is the flow and fire of thought in his discourse, an effectiveness of imagery and loftiness of style which thrills every Opiatelos who attaches himself to the class. The separate stages of individual experience, with their causes and significance, are the textual pivots of his powerful discourses. He is a metaphysician, yet feels with the Opiatalia who hear him. Hundreds love him, although they know not the import of his speeches. The multitude catch his geniality and power, but not his thought. The wondrous Age made now attracted me. I walked very near to the formation, put my hand upon its smooth sides, and began like an architect to examine the material and construction. The building substance used is called aureola, but where obtained and how formed into a transparent wall 80 times finer than the finest earthly glass, I as yet know not. It is wondrously strong, and can photograph itself upon any suitable substance in 324 of your seconds. Here friend Wilson unrolled a light, gauzy substance, and showed me a curious painting of the temple, taken from where he stood when first he saw it. In grandeur, magnitude, and newness of structure, it exceeds everything I ever imagined. The likeness of the temple was limited almost entirely to a single section or wing. Yet from the uniformity of the sections, as indicated by his verbal descriptions of the palace, I could gather from this picture an image of the entire structure. The domes appeared like a sea of terraced mountains of something finer than, but as real as, glass, and like the Alps, they extended away toward the horizon, until, to my eyes, the temple was blended with and lost in the air. In my haste to take the gauzy picture in my own hand, in order to examine it more critically, he said, "Not yet, brother," and instantly withdrew it. But of the temple, he continued, "It cannot be compared, either in material or construction, to any earthly edifice. The foundations and uprising walls appear to grow like trees from the spirit land. Its many mountainous domes shed a mellow light upon the distant hills and countless streams. The palace of the living God, to my earthly fancy, could not be more perfect and beautiful. It is surrounded by a reflecting atmosphere, with a power superior to that of the sun. Afar from the kingdom of earth I stood, my brother, and the palace doors, like flowers in bloom, welcomed me. My joy was full of light like sunbeams, yet entered either a sorrowful guest. Vazona, this name is given to a visitor, has come. Vazona is here," was shouted and echoed through the vast mansion. Words grew unfrequent and low in every direction. The wing of the temple in which I stood was immense, and subdivided into tented apartments like a fairground or festival, and in each alcove and grotto, as far as I could see, there was something artificial. Yet a mystic shade, like the shadow of autumn upon the brilliant bloom of summer, covered every person and place. The mansion was filled with people of every country on earth, young and old, who seemed to be examining and adoring the beautiful and strange articles on exhibition. In silence I walked among the thronging visitors. Many faces smiled sweetly as I approached, yet a mute wail of grief seemed to succeed. Many looked happy for a moment, but a shadow of unrest swept over their faces. My astonishment and perplexity increased every instant. The plaintive song of the Bhaskaratala floated through the temple, and the flowers, like myrtles in bloom, shed a fragrance of sorrow upon all. "What can this mean?" I exclaimed. "Is this in the spirit land?" As I spoke, a hand touched me upon the shoulder. I turned, and beheld my Upusia, the teacher, who said, "These are Opiatalia, can you not do them much good?" I besought the Greek to instruct me in the causes of their condition. He answered, "Speak to that young man," pointing to a person near us, "and get from him his story." Obeying the suggestion, I asked the youth to confide to me his secret grief. "That I will do, my darling," he tenderly replied, "if you will promise to aid me to enjoy this beautiful world." Crossing my hands upon his bosom, I promised to do all in my power for his happiness. "Thanks, my Zona Bhaskaratala," he enthusiastically exclaimed, "you will make me free as the flowing Apilabhida, and my happiness will be like that of the Arabula." He grasped my hand lovingly, and said, "Follow me to my Tolka." The good Atali made it to instruct me forever. Without hesitation I went with him through many avenues of the wing, and halted before a great circle of happy spirits, who were, like Chinese, busily constructing toys, as I thought. The young man called upon Atali, and a benevolent woman made her appearance. "This is my Upusia," said the youth, pointing to me as his teacher, and added, "Allow him to behold the Tolka." The fond-bosomed woman held up what resembled a common leather purse, filled with gold and diamonds and other jewelry. I wanted the good Atali to instruct me as to its significance. She waved her hand negatively, but the youth said, "I will show you all." Unquestioningly I followed him beyond the temple, over the flowing Atadile, away from the isle, and presently I observed that he was guiding me earthward. The beautiful sphere was afar, and as we approached the earth, he said, "I am an Italian boy of much wickedness, and I must remain on the isle of Acropanemade, must live and labor for the fraternity of Plana Dualfos, must visit the good Atali once every day, and look at that purse of gold and diamonds, until I can overcome the effect of the evil I did before the day of my death." Upon inquiring of his earthly home, he replied, "Here we are just over the river Iria, in Italy, where my earthly body was lost in the effort to escape the officers of justice." Immediately he drew my attention to a small Italian house, in a place called Vinstella, wherein I beheld a sorrowful and impoverished woman, looking at the likeness of her lost boy. "That is my mother," said the youth, "sadly, she is very poor and wretched, for the king took all her property to redress the wrong I did an officer's lady, whose money and jewelry I one night stole from her casket. Remembering the purse I saw in the spirit land, in the hand of the good Atali, on the isle of Acropanemade, I suggested the return of the property by dropping it upon his mother's lap." The Italian youth smiled with pallor, and replied, "Ah, my darling Upusia, that leather purse in the spirit land is nothing to me but an artificial image, bearing admonition and education. It is substantial and significant there, but here, on earth, it is the same as an imitation, without weight and without value." As he spoke thus, a new light dawned upon my yet more teachable and reflective reason. The Agamede, then, is a temple of antiquities, a palace where past deeds or things are made to be present, until the right comes right upon earth, and until justice is fulfilled by the evildoer. "Yes," interposed the youth, "such is the temple. It is memory's crystal palace. Every artificial Tolka is an image of something, or of some particular deed, accomplished or sought by the individual before death." While he was yet speaking, I beheld the officer on the earth whose lady the boy had robbed, and by whose instigation the mother was reduced to wretchedness and beggary. "What would give you perfect happiness?" asked the youth. "To behold my mother's property restored, and the officer's lady forgetful of my theft," He quickly responded.